Hi guys, welcome back to We Should Talk, a pop culture interview series from In the Know. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the podcast we have Jake Cohen, who is a New York Times bestselling cookbook author. He is about to release his second cookbook called I Could Nosh. If you're on social media, Instagram, TikTok, you have definitely also come across this content. He has some great cooking content, and he just has the best energy. And so I would love to have him on to promote this book, I Could Nosh, and which really is a, I mean, a lot of his content is this. His first book was this, but this second book is definitely like a celebration of his Jewish culture. And it's a lot of Jewish recipes and revisiting old family recipes and updating them and modernizing them and just celebrating a lot of that culture. And we talked a lot about that in this interview because he wrote this beautiful preface at the beginning of the cookbook. And it's just, he has a lot of really great points to make, a lot of which were born out of promoting his first book and the different kinds of questions that he was asked as part of that experience. And so we just unpacked a lot of that stuff. And he's also had some great kind of pop culture-y moments over the years. You know, Britney Spears once reposted his videos out of the blue, and he visited the White House earlier this year as part of Jewish American Heritage Month. And you know, he just had some really, you know, him posting online and blowing up and having almost a million followers has led to all these amazing experiences, and including writing these two books. And so I just loved talking to him about that. So keep listening for my interview with Jake Cohen. You can pre-order I Could Nosh now, and it's available on September 12th wherever you get your books. And please rate, review, and subscribe to We Should Talk on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, so we are here with New York Times bestselling cookbook author Jake Cohen. His second book, I Could Nosh, comes out on September 12th. Jake, I'm excited to talk to you. How are you?
I'm good. It's an exciting time.
Yeah, we've been like Instagram friends for a bit now, but I've been wanting to do one of these with you for a bit, so this is the perfect time. How are you feeling sort of in the lead up to the book?
It's interesting. There are a lot of emotions and feelings. I've done this already, so it's kind of like I know what to do. That being said, when the first one does well, then like the pressure's on for the second, and each one, I always say like cookbooks are kind of like fashion collections because they're these like little snapshots of like your obsessions. So there's like to a degree where everyone's going to receive each book a little differently. So, 100%. But overall, it's good. It's good.
And we'll get into it, but you write this, you have this really great preface in this book where you talk about that experience of promoting your first book and some of the frustrations that came from that. But putting that to aside for a second, was there certain feedback from that first book that like people loved certain things or people didn't kind of react in the way that you expected to certain things from that first book that you took into the creation of the second one?
Yeah, I think the anecdotes. We live in this age where you think of like online recipes and there's that kind of trope of like, just go straight to the recipe. I don't need about like that 15-page story that a blogger does. That being said, in my first book, every recipe has quite kind of like a fleshed out head note with like an anecdote of the history, whether it's like family story, friend story, relationship story of how it came to fruition. And that's what people kind of love the most is how people read a cookbook, even if they're like, the hope is that they're cooking every recipe, but a lot of people are reading it like a novel,
like
which
a memoir,
is great because that's kind of what it is. These are little snapshots into my life.
Did you consider going straight memoir for the second book because of that, or were you like, no, this is my lane?
No, because I love a vignette, and that's the best part of a recipe. Totally. It's like it could be a little story. It's not like this overarching thing. Also, I'm not gonna lie, it's one of the beautiful things about being in the cookbook space or being even a public figure in food is that so much of what I do is kind of through this like beautiful wall of recipes where I get to share like little tiny aspects of myself, and yet I don't have to kind of give away too much.
There's no expectation to like open your entire life up. Totally. So again, I really love the preface to this book because I think that you mentioned promoting the book, and there's these two questions that really kind of frustrated you from that experience that you kind of elaborate on. And the first is the question of like, what's next? You're here promoting this, like this book that you've worked for a very long time on. You put all this love into, and people are already asking you about, you know, what's the next one going to be, you know? And, you know, as somebody who interviews for a living, like that's honestly really interesting feedback because I don't always ask that question, but like a lot of times somebody is promoting something and you sort of, but it's sort of like you end the interview and it's like, all right, well, what's after this, you know? But that's interesting feedback from your perspective. Can you elaborate on why that question frustrated you? Because I think your explanation of it in the book was great, but I don't want to like, you know, narrate it for you.
I think it's overall, it's like, it's the culture around art through the lens of capitalism, which is like, I'm very candid about that. That's great because that's what allows me to literally live out my dream and just cook all day and do everything I love. So
right,
bless,
sure, yes,
go with
thank
God,
you,
all of
yes,
that. That being said, there's this need of like when you put in so much energy, especially something like a book or any of these projects, when anyone's really talking or promoting something, so much of like themselves, their blood, sweat, and tears goes into it. And yeah, a lot of times it's like, this is great, we love it, amazing, when can you give us the next one? And we do live in this culture of like constant like digestion of content and needing more. And we think about that with like television. We think about that with like, again, one of the things that we really connect on is you're very much also in like the Bravosphere.
Yeah.
And we think about how easy and quick it is of someone liked something, great, we're gonna speed it up and like get the cameras
totally
back rolling,
yeah,
and let's just
mm-hmm
keep
a constant just
stuff
sort of
out.
Like, yeah wheel of it, yeah.
And there's this like idea around creativity, like it's this never-ending resource that doesn't need to be kind of, I don't know, given
nurture.
Yeah. And that's why I love being like project-based and like crank out a book every couple of years. And then outside of that, go into my little hole and be out of the public eye and all of that.
Yeah. You said in the book that what you did sort of in response to that, you just sort of like go back into the kitchen to recharge, kind of find renewed inspiration. You go back into like the family recipe box and like kind of riff on that. When you go into the kitchen with that sort of mindset, is it like, okay, I'm blocking everything out and I'm just going to like put my head down and work and not accept that negative energy? Is that what that does for you?
I think what it does is I like to create spaces of kind of necessity where it's like almost like a chopped survivor, like people are coming over. I'm actually, again, of course, I'm like bashing about what's next, and I obviously already have another book in the works. And the thing that I know it's going to be all about the press cycle the next time is like, this year is my first year doing a quarter share on Fire Island, and that has been the best situation of being in a place where I just have to like cook for all these people, see what happens, see what I have, and make it work. And so many incredible recipes come out from situations like that, where you're really not going with like this expectation of planning your whole menu out, but like, all right, let's see what happens.
Let's riff on it. Yeah.
Let's riff.
So is that a true tease of what the third book is?
Potentially.
Okay.
Potentially.
And also what's nice about that is like you're going there once a month. It's just it's these pockets of that, of it's that hit of like almost the adrenaline, you know, and then you're pulled out of it.
I mean, literally adrenaline, serotonin, everything. Yeah.
100%. And so the second question that you said sort of really kind of got you thinking, kind of you had a reaction to from that first press cycle was, you know, people asking you when were you going to branch out of quote unquote just Jewish food. And I think that you had this really kind of beautiful response to that within your book, and you put it into this, the explanation is really, really makes sense to me. And we write that society has a blind spot for Jewish food in which it's acceptable to devalue our rich and diverse culture. Obviously that's a loaded topic, and the explanation for that is there's a long history for why that is, but can you just elaborate on that a little bit and just sort of, you know, how you try to personally push back on that?
Yeah, I think, and this is something I love surrounding myself with creatives from other industries, not so many food people, but I love like comedians and actors and Broadway people. And one of the things that comes up all the time, mainly from them, but again, I faced it too, is this idea of like, oh, you're too Jewish. You're not mainstream enough because you represent this caricature of who you are or what our community is thought of. When really a lot of times it's just like, I think authenticity is always going to prevail. So even if I am doing a book that's not like inherently Jewish, it's going to be kind of Jewish. It's like, I am this Fran
exactly,
Drescher
who you
caricature
are.
And that's like who I am to my core, and that's going to be represented in everything I do. And whether that's like in your face, ju-ju-ju, or just like subtly undertone, ju-ju-ju, it's going to be there.
No, I love it. And it's clear to me that, like, you know, writing about Jewish culture and cooking Jewish food and kind of really honing in on that and celebrating that professionally has been pretty transformational for you. It seems like it feels like it's just been empowering to you just as a person. Is that accurate to say?
Like, it's something, it was the first time that I kind of just like felt like I was adding to the conversation. I think so much in this world is kind of just white noise,
yeah,
of people doing things. They think it's content that's going to be enjoyed or art that's going to be marketable. When really it's just, I don't know, there's a Yiddish word, dreck, which is just like, it's garbage. It's just like more and more garbage.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I started kind of focusing on Jewish food and so much of like the hospitality and recipes that are rooted in stories and family and the interconnection of how we use food as the medium for hospitality,
right,
that everything just kind of made a little more sense. It vibed a little bit better. People started to see themselves a little bit deeper in my work, that it became very clear that that's just authentically the story I need to tell.
Yeah. And it's clearly the right lane for you to go down, because people are responding positively to it. And that's, it's reinforcing that it's the right choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you talk about surrounding yourself with people from other sort of creative industries. Do you take any advice or tips from people that are in other industries that you have taken into your own?
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so funny, because I was never a Broadway gay. So like, I don't know any of the shows or the songs, and yet
everyone
I know happens to be on Broadway. And one of my best friends gave me this like piece of advice that I will take to the grave. And it was all about reviews. Like, you always think like opening night, like you get the Times review, all that stuff. And he always told me, he's like, you can't internalize the good reviews, because when you internalize the good reviews, then you have to internalize the bad ones.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much being proud of the work, putting your full heart into it, and then letting both the positive and negative roll off. So if you get so hung up on all of the accolades and the praise, then any criticism is going to just live deep inside you. And it's just like, it's not healthy for your ego.
It's not.
In either direction.
100%. You know, so I grew up in a very WASPy environment. I went to an Episcopalian high school. I'm not religious, but that's just sort of the environment I grew up in. But then I went to the University of Michigan, where all of a sudden I'm in a dorm and I'm one of the only non-Jewish people in my entire dorm. And then I was like this, exposed to all this amazing Jewish culture. And I went to Shabbat dinners and I just like learned a lot about just some of the Jewish values and community and connection and all those things. And it really is, a lot of it is based around food and bringing people together, at least from my personal experience in college and beyond. I guess, can you speak to why food is such a central force sort of in Jewish culture and what that does for people? Because I think about some of these Shabbat dinners that I've been to, it creates this really special kind of, I don't know, it just brings people together in a way that's kind of hard to put into words.
Yeah. So I always say like food is such a cornerstone of so much Jewish ritual. And when you think about like, what are we talking about when we're talking about ritual? It's like, really, these are conversations around morals and ethics that are rooted in gathering with your family and your community. So something like Shabbat, which I'm like, it's something I didn't grow up with. My husband also did not grow up with Shabbat, something that we brought into our homes as adults. It is the day of rest, where it's like from Friday night to Saturday night, you are unplugging, being present. To me, it's like, yeah, I'm not doing the full thing, but at least on Friday night, we make an effort to turn off our phones, have people over, be present with them, like both reflect on the week behind and recharge for the week ahead. And,
yeah,
and it is an act of self-care in a way. And the idea around the meal and the food, it is what takes, I always say, it's like it turns friends into family and strangers into friends. It's what gathers us and takes it from just any type of meeting into a celebration, into an opportunity to dive deeper. There's also something that's so intimate. And we live in this world where like intimacy is so lost around, like in a big city like New York. And I think creating spaces where you could be vulnerable, creating spaces where you get to like really show people a little bit more about who you are, is great. And there's no better way than like, if you invite the wildest person you know, like the thing of like the most famous person you know, if you're like, I want to take you for coffee, or let's go out for a double date, or let's do this, or let's do that, there could be like some hesitation that like, when you invite someone to Shabbat dinner, you are telling them, this is like the most intimate situation. I just want to connect with you.
Yeah.
In a way that's so like,
it's pure.
Anti.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so like anti New York garbage.
No, it's fantastic. And you also talk about how like part of the appeal of food in Jewish culture is like, it's actually a lot for the person who's making it and serving it to people. It's not necessarily for the person receiving it and eating it.
Yeah. That's like kind of how I got into cooking. I always said it was like, I wasn't very popular. I was like this like heavy set kid in high school that didn't have many friends. And I kind of used food and these little dinner parties as a way to like trick people into like, come be my friend in exchange for a meal. And listen, I mean, kind of, I do the same thing still to this day, but
not all my Broadway friends.
Exactly. They sing for me. I can't sing.
Perfect.
So it's a good
sing
trade.
For your supper. Exactly.
Exactly.
So you say that your last book was really about like you and your husband's love story and kind of combining your experiences in life and unpacking those and bringing them together. And this one is really more about like self-love and celebrating your own Jewishness kind of all year round, and not just, you know, in mainstream media, we'll see it kind of highlighted around the high holidays and Passover and things like that, but not, it's not something that's really integrated into like mainstream food culture necessarily. That's so important. That's a really important message just overall to have as part of this book. I mean, that's amazing.
It's something that, I don't know, you look for the small victories.
Yeah.
It's figuring like what, like where do you get to see this representation? When I tell you, the tiniest things bring me so much joy. Literally just like, it was like Brooks braiding challah in Salt Lake City, or Erin
yes.
on the Roni reboot, having Shabbat with her family. It's like these little things, and you don't understand that for a huge portion of America, this is their first time seeing something Jewish, or seeing it in a way that's just rooted in positivity. And that's like super special. So to be part of that kind of wave of like, how do we make Jewish food cool? How do we make it fun? How do we make it mainstream in a way that it can be celebrated by all? It's like, everyone loves bagels. Bagels are
come on now.
Everywhere in this country. Yeah.
I also really love that like, your family clearly is like part of the feedback and sort of you crafting these recipes. You know, this one's dedicated to your sister. You call your biggest critic. Your husband is your biggest muse, you say. I just love that your family is so involved in this whole process with you. Like, do you actively bring them in? Do they force themselves in?
Somewhere in between.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding when I'm telling you, like, Fran Drescher is my everything. Like, down to like my life,
Queen.
my husband had never seen The Nanny, and we just watched it together. I rewatched it with him.
The whole thing,
start to finish, amazing. And this was before she had her moment as the SAG president with the strike. But the biggest takeaway is that he's like Middle Eastern, had never really been exposed to Ashkenazi culture. So him watching this was so kind of daunting, because he's like, this is your family. Like, this is like exactly like your family. And they're overbearing and they're always present. And we're always talking about how hungry we are. And we're also always talking about our bodies. And it's like, it's something that's so funny and not unique to just Jews, but the immigrant story across the world. But I think there's something that I really am just like so grateful to have my family so close. My mother and sister each live a block away from me, and this is a new setting. We were actually all in the same building for many years.
Wow. So we're kind of branching out a little bit.
And I miss it. I'm honestly, it was devastating. It was devastating.
I want to end by asking you about two fun things that have happened to you in the past several years. One is Britney Spears reposted one of your avocado toast videos. Obviously, I have to ask. I'm a Britney boy. Where were you when you saw that she had posted your video?
I was in my apartment. It's okay. Literally when I tell you I have accomplished things that I only dreamed of in this world, in this career. And the majority of my friends couldn't give two shits. And the way that they freaked out over Britney, like nothing. Again, listen, she's free. Hopefully she's happy. I love making a shidduch. So now that she's single, who knows?
But like, it's funny because, you know, there's a lot to be said about her Instagram, but like, she does find these like little things that she'll repost. And I assume that as the person who is sort of on the receiving end of that, there's no way to find out exactly how she came across you or whatever. It's there and it happened.
That's the internet. But that's how I love the internet. So many of the people that I now, like, I'll only refer to as a friend if we've taken this like into the real world versus like these virtual friendships that people have, which like the internet's not a real place. So I don't consider those like a friendship. But a lot of it just comes about like, they found my stuff. They've made my recipes. The number of people that are like household names that come to me and they go, oh, I heard about you because my mother loves you. They're like, because that's my demographic.
Hey, that's your way in, their mothers. There we go.
And then it's the vice versa. It's like they're telling their mothers and their mothers are telling their daughters and gay sons. And that's
it's the network. You know, we love it.
That's it.
And then the second one is that earlier this year, you went to the White House. What was that for? That looked like an amazing day that you had there.
Yeah, it was really cool. It's for Jewish American Heritage Month. Funny enough, it was the majority of like my Shabbat group, which so it's myself, Alex Edelman, the comedian, Shoshana Bean, the Broadway actress, Ben Shpasek, the playwright. And I'm also very active in the Jewish nonprofit world. So to be able to go and just like celebrate Judaism and Mikhail Diamond and Ben Platt performed from Parade, and it was a very much a positive.
Very validating kind of just experience, a milestone to reach, honestly.
It was kind of crazy because it was in the 2 week span. I went to the White House and then I was in Tel Aviv for Pride, and I had surprised my mother with her first trip to Israel. And when we were in Jerusalem, I knew a member of the Knesset, so we got a private tour of the Knesset, and someone who I'm friends with who was there, she's like, it's been a kind of crazy month for you in terms of politics. But hey, listen, say yeah. I just say yes to the universe. That's it.
Say yes to the universe. I like that. I guess lastly, I maybe should have asked this at the beginning, but I would love if you could just speak to like what led you to this. I mean, the past couple of years have been really, really amazing for you, like since your first book, really. What really led to that? I mean, was it just like kind of blowing up online and having amazing content that people have really responded to you, like we've talked about? Or like, what were some of those stepping stones for you to kind of get to some of these, you know, things that were on your bucket list?
I would say having a crazy delusional mind helps. Like, I just have these fantasies and then it's like, great, now how do we make that a reality?
Totally.
And understanding the way the world works in terms of like social media and stuff like that, where I know I have a story to tell, and it's finding what are the forums and mediums to tell that story the best, especially with something like a recipe. And then from there, it's the network of meeting people. And all I want to do is cook for people. That's all. Like, not in like a restaurant. I'm no interest in that. But like, just meeting people and cooking for them and having these situations. And when I'm telling you like the most wildest dinner parties, things like little private cooking lessons, like they just come about because everyone loves food. And you have this like connection. Literally the thing that people are crazy about is like, I have this like exploding friendship with Katie Couric, and we just go and we're like, I'll cook with her in her apartment or out in the Hamptons. And it's just like, and
we I don't find know how I same, got here, but you're,
we find right. the same things to talk about that I talk about with anyone else. She's just like, again, I love a middle-aged woman. Like, that is my, like, that is who I am at my core. That's we don't have, we have it. Literally, we're only just recently making friends our own age. And it's been an uphill battle because all I want to do is spend my time with old gay men and middle-aged women.
And Real Housewives, they're, totally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, they fall into one of those two groups.
Of course. Oh, yeah, that's amazing. I love that. All right, Jake, this has been so much fun. I Could Nosh is out September 12th, wherever you get your books. Pre-order it now. What, anything else you want to say about the book or you want to promote?
Yes. So if you pre-order, you get a preview of all of the recipes that are kind of perfect for Rosh Hashanah. So it's like a lot of people are like, oh, wait till it's out. If you pre-order, you can start cooking from the book immediately, which is great. And then I'm going on a pretty extensive tour around this country to see everyone in person.
Love it. I'm excited for you. Well, Jake, this has been so much fun, and we'll chat soon. Thanks for being here.
Can't wait.
Thanks for tuning in to We Should Talk. I hope you enjoyed the interview. You can find out more about In the Know at inthenow.com. You can follow me, Gibson John,